From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Tomato variety has boomed at grocery stores. Not only are there Camparis and Romas, we can choose from Ugly Ripe, dozens of heirloom varieties, and even Cabernet Grape. Some say it's in response to the lack of flavor in the common and least expensive Florida beefsteak tomato. So what happened to its flavor? We'll find out how it was bred out and talk with a scientist about getting that flavor back in. We'll also talk with a local tomato grower about the numerous heirlooms ripening right now here in Southwest Florida. Plus, we'll talk with two classically trained violinists from South Florida who are putting a pop culture spin on stringed instruments. They are Black Violin. And we'll have the local band Hot Buttered Nuggets, who will offer us a sample of their brand of vintage swing music. Both will be part of the Twisted Strings concert event this weekend. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Violins, banjos, and washtubs. Not the instruments you immediately think of for pop music, but at WGCU's Twisted Strings event this Saturday, groups from South Florida and beyond are using combinations of classic sounds and unusual instruments to create new and genre-bending music. We'll hear a sneak preview coming up a little bit later in our show. The history of tomatoes is complex. Early Americans loved them, and then Europeans feared them, thinking they were poisonous, and then we embraced them once again. Now they are a culinary superstar with hundreds of different kinds available, but the common tomato, that inexpensive one that manages to be at the grocery store every month of the year, somehow lost its flavor along the way. We are talking with horticulture researcher Denise Tiemann from the University of Florida about where that flavor went and what her team has discovered that might inject that flavor back into the common tomato. Thanks for joining us, Denise.
Oh, you're welcome.
Also here to talk tomatoes is Bo McMahon from Southern Fresh Farms in Fort Myers, where tomatoes are ripening as we speak. Thank you for being here, Bo.
My pleasure.
Have you been dismayed by a mealy, flavorless grocery store tomato? Do you have a favorite variety or a question for our guests? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Denise Tiemann, as a horticulture researcher, you and other researchers in your lab just completed a study that looked at nearly 400 types of tomatoes to try to figure out how to make them taste better. First of all, I can't believe there are 400 different kinds of tomatoes, but how did we get to this point where the tomato that we all see all the time doesn't taste any good?
Well, there are a lot of varieties of tomatoes out there, and we've only tested a fraction of them. But, what's happened is... Modern tomatoes obviously don't taste good, and what's happened over time is as people have bred them for other traits besides flavor, they've lost that flavor. So they bred for size, fruit size, yield, disease resistance, and several other traits that are really important in order to have tomatoes in the grocery store year-round. But as they bred for all those traits, they forgot about flavor along the way. And because flavor is so difficult to breed for, it's so difficult to define, it hasn't been an easy thing to also add the flavor back in. And that's what we're hoping to do now, is to be able to add the flavor from the old varieties into the varieties that have all these other traits that are so important for having tomatoes in the supermarket year-round at a reasonable cost.
Are they also bred for portability, meaning that they're the kind of tomatoes that you can pick really early and green and then ship them across the world?
That is true. I think more and more they're starting to pick them a little past the green stage, so they will have better flavor. But if the tomato varieties don't taste good to begin with, that doesn't help. So, there's a lot of problems there. They bred them to be firm and to have a long shelf life so that you can have them in the grocery store year-round. You can have them in the winter up north, when they're shipped from Mexico or from Florida. And, that's an amazing thing that we can have them year-round, but unfortunately, in getting to that point, we have lost the flavor.
So tomatoes are a new world crop that have a rich history. Do we know where they came from and how they came to be associated with so many different and unique cultural foods?
Yeah, they originated originally from Peru, and then they moved up, the indigenous people of the Americas, they moved up north to Peru and into Mexico and into the rest of South America. And then when the Europeans came, they took the seeds back to Europe, and they grew them there, and they started breeding them there, so they became a different thing again. They got larger, the flavor changed, the shapes changed, the colors changed, And then when the Europeans went to the Americas again, they brought them back from Europe, and then they started breeding them here, and they became another variety, more varieties of tomatoes with, again, different traits.
Did the evolution of the tomato through these different kinds of breedings, did that fast forward a little bit after the Industrial Revolution and suburbia and sprawl and supermarkets?
Well, definitely the supermarkets have made a big change in everything. So no, we don't get our vegetables locally anymore, our fruits and vegetables locally anymore. So they come from all over the country and from all over the world, really. And so that's led to a lot of problems. You can't grow an heirloom tomato that only has a shelf life of 1 or 2 days that's really soft. You can't ship that across the country or across the world. And so that's been a huge problem. And but now what we'd like to do is have all those traits and be able to bring the flavor back in.
And in the studio with us today is Bo McMahon, and you're with Southern Fresh Farms. It's one of the local farms that is growing tomatoes. What kind of tomatoes do you grow out there?
We have a few variety. We don't get too sparse on, because like she said, there's 400 different types of varieties. But we mostly stick with the big boys. We have the cherry tomatoes, mostly big boys, and just a small variety, more of the larger ones.
Where do you think the flavor went?
Well, we have no problem with flavor because we're picking them vine ripe. Now, obviously, from a larger scale of national distribution, yeah, flavor is a big issue. From, it was mentioned before, when they're picked green and shipped across the country, yeah, when they're picked, they don't have that flavor yet. It takes time for that to get into the tomato. When, you know, growing in California, like you said, Mexico, and shipped across, it hasn't had time to get that flavor in. But we find, you know, we don't have a problem with that because we're selling them vine ripe. So if, you know, if flavor is something you're looking for, we suggest try shopping local. I mean, actually go to the farm where we have it. But that's also becoming a problem in the world today, is because local farmers are disappearing through just commercial, especially what we have here in Southwest Florida. Farms are becoming more and more rare every year. Every time a new development pops up, grocery store stuff, you know, tourism's our main deal. That's where we get our money from. It's understandable. But at the same time, we're also losing local farms in that process. You know, that you've heard the term no farmers, no food. Well, there's also no local farms, no local food. And that's just not a phrase anymore. That's actually happening. That's,
well, you mentioned earlier that also there are some Florida tomatoes that will be grown in Florida but then shipped to New Jersey or wherever and then repackaged and then redistributed right back to Florida.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's one of the major problems we have with, say, getting flavor tomatoes with flavor is our distribution process we have in this country. So, yeah, we have lots of tomato fields in the wintertime here in Florida, and they produce a great product. But that product is not shipped locally. It's shipped to different distribution points across the country, repackaged, and then brought back down to Florida. So when you go to the Publix, Winn-Dixie, whatever your shopping choice is, you know, that tomato might have been come from Florida, but it did some traveling before it got to that
grocery
store.
It did a world tour before it got here.
It did a little bit of a tour before it got back to where you shopped it from.
Denise, picking later, does that make the flavor happen? Is that a big part of the problem?
It is. It is. The later they're picked, the more flavor they've developed already on the vine, and that's the ideal. But it's not always practical. But the firmer tomatoes really help, so we can pick those at later maturity when they're already ripening, and so they were developing that flavor. So that helps a lot.
So is your goal to try to get these flavor genes that you've discovered back into the tomatoes that are able to be shipped and moved around the country like this?
Yeah, that was the focus of our research. What we've done is we've really defined what makes good flavor. So we understand now what makes a good tomato, what makes a bad tomato. And what we've done now is, because flavor is so hard to test for, it's a very labor-intensive process for us in the lab to look at all these biochemicals and look at the amounts of them and then say, does this tomato taste good or doesn't it taste good? It's a huge amount of effort, and so the breeders can't do that practically. So what we've done now is we've actually looked at the DNA of all these tomato varieties, said this little piece of DNA is important for this particular compound and another piece is important for another compound. So we take all these different pieces that are important and we can add them back into the modern tomato through breeding, and hopefully we can have the best of both worlds. So we can have the yield, we can have the firmness, and we can have the flavor all in the same tomato variety. So what we've done is make that breeding process much easier now.
And when you tasted through all the 400 different kinds, were there some that rated higher than others as far as your taster's preference, as far as sweetness and acidity and that kind of balance?
Oh, definitely. So we did not taste all 400 varieties. We looked at the biochemistry of all 400 varieties, and about a subset of about 100 of those we've had people taste, and we had new taste panels of 70 to 100 people taste each of these varieties and rate them on how much they like them and how sweet they taste to them, sour, et cetera. And so, and then we look at the biochemistry of those same tomatoes, and then we can relate biochemistry to flavor. So that's the first step in the process, is to understand the combination of biochemicals makes the tomato taste good so that people like it. And then we can look at the DNA and now begin to breed better-tasting tomatoes.
So it's more than just looking at the residual sugar and the relative
definitely.
Acidity.
Definitely. So in the past breeding, they've looked at the traits that have been easy to look for. So they look for sugar. They look for acids, which are important for flavor, no doubt about it. But the problem is they've not been able to look at the aroma compounds. That's the part that's really difficult. And those aroma compounds are what give tomato that real tomato flavor that makes it special, that makes it a tomato.
And that's why they like to sell sometimes the tomatoes on the vine, because the aroma from the vine will lead someone to believe.
And it reminds you of tomato when you pick it off that vine. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I think that it works on me, too, because I think a lot of our taste is in our olfactory. So,
definitely. That's where all the good stuff is. That's where all the complexity of flavor comes from.
And I wanted to ask you about heirloom tomatoes. Did they fall into your research? And what is a definition of an heirloom tomato?
Generally, heirloom tomatoes are considered those that came before intensive breeding, so before the 1950s pretty much, when they started to really breed for all these other traits. And, you know, there's many, many varieties of heirloom tomatoes, and some of them taste really great, some of them aren't that great. But you know, we all have this perception that heirloom tomatoes are the best, and they do. There's some great flavors in there.
Yeah, but they're also $5.99 a pound versus, what, $1.99
exactly.
a pound?
Exactly.
And sometimes you don't know what you're going to get.
I'm sorry?
Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes you'll get one that's just really hard as a rock and has almost no flavor when you get the mixed heirlooms.
That's true. You know, there's so many varieties of heirloom tomatoes. And, you know, they've just been saved over years and years and years. And some of the varieties have even changed over time. You know, the genes, they've outcrossed or whatever. Bees came along and crossed them to another tomato, and they've changed over time. So Brandywine especially, there's so many different Brandywines around, and they all have slightly different flavor.
And you found that Maglia Rosa Cherry was one of the best?
That's a very good one. Yeah, there were several small-fruited varieties. Maglia Rosa is not too big. It's a small-fruited variety, but it has excellent flavor. So unfortunately, the plant's very sickly, and it's not too happy. So it's one of those varieties that has the great flavor, but really needs all the attributes from the modern tomatoes so that people can grow it easily.
So it's a tough to grow. It's good as a good tomato, but it's tough to grow, and the plant's really kind of sickly, huh?
Yeah, it's very sickly, yeah.
That's kind of a tough thing to deal with, especially if you're going to be throwing a dice on an acre of land and you have a bunch
of... Well, exactly, yeah. You know, if you're a big grower, you really can't afford to take those kind of risks.
And so the adage, the smaller, the sweeter, the smaller, the better, is that true with tomatoes? Did you find that?
Yes, generally the smaller fruited varieties have more sugar, and so they are sweeter. But it doesn't necessarily translate to tomato flavor, because that's the aroma compound. So you need that sweetness for sure for good flavor, but it's the aroma compounds that really make things taste wonderful.
So, Bo McMahon, you grow these guys. Have you thought about this science and the aroma and everything about these tomatoes?
We do what we can to move product, but we try to just have our tomatoes just have the taste themselves. You know, we have the proof in the pudding. Like, we try to sample them. Like, we know we're vine ripe picking these tomatoes, so we know the flavors there in comparison to what you're getting at the grocery store. But, you know, I like to get to a point, you know, when she had mentioned about yields, it is vital for American farmers to produce yields, and they have to do things the way they do them to be able to get those yields, because we have a massive population in this country. Everybody wants tomatoes, so they have to be able to grow them and distribute them the way they can, which is unfortunately, you're going to lose flavor in that process, but we still need to do it that way to produce the tomatoes. So, you know, if they're able to find a way to put flavor in them, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, one thing we found is people are wary when their tomatoes are messed with. You know, they don't have the they don't understand the science of it, or they just – the first thing when it comes to – you don't going to mention GMOs or anything like that. So they kind of just lumped general science all in with that phrase, unwarranted. But this is kind of the unfortunate world we live in today with the internet, everything. People sometimes are misinformed to how things are done. But, you have a very sound science like it sounds like they're trying to do here. But unfortunately, not everybody takes to that science.
Yeah. This is Gulf Coast Live, and we're talking about tomatoes with people who grow them and also with researchers who say they've found the flavor genes needed to make them taste better. Do you have any questions or a comment? Share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Denise, Beau brought up a good point. Do you have pushback, or do you have people concerned about messing with the genetic makeup of a tomato? Or how are you going to do this? Are we talking about injecting with a syringe something in a lab, or something about breeding and crossbreeding for preferred traits?
No, everything we've done is done by traditional breeding. So it's the same way that all the different varieties of heirloom tomatoes have come about. It's people growing them up, crossing two different tomato plants. We have two different parents, just like you do with people. And then you look at the children of that cross, and you pick out the ones that are the best. And that was how we got so many different varieties of heirloom tomatoes, mm-hmm. all the different colors and everything. And it's the way the modern tomatoes have also lost their flavor. You know, it was just bred into them because they had to breed in all these other important traits. When they looked at the children of all those crosses, they didn't pick the ones with the best flavor, but they picked it for the variety, for the traits that they were looking for. And so, no, we're not doing anything with GMOs or anything. We're just trying to make that breeding process easier. That's our entire goal.
And I wanted to ask a question just to clarify, because I think there's a whole lot of confusion about what a genetically modified organism is versus selective breeding and hybridizing methods. Can you, as a scientist, kind of just break that down for me in the simplest terms?
Yeah, GMOs are where you take a gene that we've developed in the lab and add it to the plant. So that can be a gene from another species, or it can be a tomato gene. So it's really not as scary and complicated as people think.
I agree.
Beau's in agreement.
If we were more acceptable to GMOs, we'd have a lot less problems with the lack of food. And, well, in truth, the GMOs that are out there, the corn and the soybeans and such, have really done wonders for agriculture, so that we have the yields that we need to feed the people in this country. Because otherwise, we wouldn't have the cheap food that we have in the grocery store.
100%.
There'd be more shortages, and it would be much more expensive.
Yeah, and Robert, you're in agreement.
100%. You know, people, you know, they scream about, oh, GMOs are bad, because they heard one bad story about it. And unfortunately, that one bad story, you know, they've never heard, you know, GMOs have been around forever, but the first time they hear about it, it was lumped in with something bad, like Monsanto, whatever, when in fact, GMOs have been a massive help to our American agriculture. You know, we have a massive population that we have to feed. And if we were to wipe that out, people would then gripe about the prices that they were going to pay for that produce because of the cost it would take to feed that many people, and we wouldn't have the yields that we have today without this. It's just unfortunate that not everybody is properly educated on how that's done, but I agree 100%. You know, it's done wonders for our country and in helping feed the people, because we got to eat. And
another thing you talked about earlier was there are different kinds of shoppers. We were talking before we went on the air. There are three different kinds of shoppers.
Yeah, you know what I found through our farmers market locally is I kind of can lump people into three different shoppers. You know, you have the people that just they don't care where their food comes from. It's more about economical sense, convenience. That's why McDonald's and Burger King and all the fast food restaurants are a booming industry. There's a majority of people that are on a budget, and health isn't necessarily a concern for them. Then you have B. There's people that want to eat healthy, but at the same time don't necessarily educate themselves about where their food comes from. As long as they're eating a green or eating a tomato or whatever, that's good enough for them. Then there's C. There's people that want to eat healthy, want to know where their food comes from, how it was grown, and just completely have full knowledge about what they're eating. Unfortunately, for someone like us that tries to produce a local product and have a local market, that is the smallest group of everybody. A is the largest. B, you know, it's in the middle. You can kind of convince some of B to come to C. You know, hey, if you're going to eat good, why don't you know where your food comes from, have that healthy option. And, you know, if you want flavored tomatoes, you want flavor in your tomatoes, why don't you shop from a local place? Come to a farm where you've seen where it's grown. We've harvested every day and not distributed from and who knows where. And because people aren't exactly educated on the distribution process of this country, you know, if it says Procter USA, doesn't always necessarily mean grown in USA. It just means it was packaged in USA. It's just unfortunate. People are, I think today, are focusing on the wrong aspects of their food.
And maybe fighting with it a little bit much.
Yeah.
Another thing about it too is if you have tomatoes that everybody right now wants to have them every month and they want to have them available and they want them to be there, but right now they don't taste good. Eventually, could fewer and fewer people choose to select that tomato because it just doesn't taste good?
Yeah.
And then end up without any tomato. And Denise, you can talk to me about the importance and the nutritional value of a tomato for people.
Well, that's just it. The sad thing is because our fruits and vegetables don't taste as good, people aren't eating as much. You know, I think what we need to do is bring the flavor back into all these foods, and people will eat a lot more and they'll be a lot healthier. And I think that's the most important thing. The nutrition is there in the tomatoes. We just need to make people eat more of them.
Yeah,
it's so important for all the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals and, you know, things like lycopene. That's the red color in the tomato. You need that. That's healthy. And if you're not eating them, you're not getting it.
And I wanted to ask you, are there any other vegetables or fruits that you can imagine this being applied to?
Yes, and some of the people in our department are starting this. So, like I said, the beginning of this work was very labor-intensive and a lot of work and took us many years. But we have people that are starting to use the same techniques we used on tomato for strawberries, blueberries, and some other crops.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to thank you for joining us today, tomato researcher Denise Thiemann from the University of Florida and Beau McMahon from Southern Fresh Farms. We have links to your article and to Southern Fresh Farms on WGCUnews.org so you can see the latest of what both parties on the show have been working on and what they're doing. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, when genres cross, some of the most interesting music can be made. We will talk with two young violin players, bringing modern hip-hop to classical melodies, and we'll talk with a local duo keeping the vintage in American rockabilly. We'll be right back.
Homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love, homegrown tomatoes. But there's nothing that homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your own very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs and eat them with gravy. You can eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle. A homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomato.